Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch, brought to you by Concordia Seminary St. Louis. I'm Paul Robbie, a member of the Exegetical Department here, and I will lead you through the appointed Old Testament lesson for December 20th, the fourth Sunday in Advent. The lesson comes from the great prophet Micah, chapter 5. And in Hebrew, it starts at 5 verse 1. In English, it starts at 5 verse 2. This is one of the places where the English numbering differs from the Hebrew numbering. This is paired with the Luke 1 reading. The lectionary wants us to focus not only on the Messiah, but also on Mary, the Mother of God. So we'll take a look at Micah 5. The lectionary wants us to conclude with 4a in the Hebrew, 5a in the English, but I think that's a mistake. Whenever the lectionary says stop with an A or stop with a B, be suspicious. And they want you to leave off something that's not politically correct. But here we see that the Messiah is going to be a warrior who's going to defeat his enemies. And, oh, that sounds militaristic. We got to leave that part off. But the fact is, part of the gospel is the Messiah does defeat his enemies. There is a military motif to the gospel. There's just no getting around it. Now, we start then with Micah, and I'll use the Hebrew numbering, Micah 5, verse 1. Let's be sure to get the context. At the end of chapter 4, Micah addresses the daughter of Zion, who will be besieged and attacked. This it says at the end of 4, verse 14, with a rod they will smite on my cheek, or smite on the cheek, the judge of Israel. And historically, this would be a reference to 701 B.C., when the Assyrians under Sennacherib attacked Jerusalem. And, of course, you recall that event. They destroyed 46 towns of Judah, and they took into exile 200,000 people of Judah. So there was this huge exile in 701 B.C. at the time of Isaiah and Micah by Assyria. And it looked, humanly speaking, like Assyria was going to conquer Jerusalem as well. Of course, you recall the great miracle that Hezekiah prayed to Yahweh, and Yahweh delivered Jerusalem. And overnight, the angel of death destroyed 185,000 Assyrian troops. One of the great miracles recorded in the Bible. But before we get to that miracle, Assyria is conquering. They are the enemy of God's people. They are conquering the whole world, really, and including Israel. God's people are under the thumb of a foreign tyrant, and God's people are unable to save themselves. If they have any hope, it will have to come from some outside source. God himself will have to save them. All right, so at the end of 14, Zion, Jerusalem, is besieged. And now comes our text in 5 verse 1. But you, O Beth Lechem, Bethlehem is this well-known town about 5 miles south of Jerusalem, a very small town. That's the hometown of King David. It's in the region of Ephrathah, Beth Lechem, house of bread. But you, O Bethlehem, he's no longer talking to Jerusalem. Now he's talking to Bethlehem, which is significant. The Messiah does not come from Jerusalem, where all the elites are. The Messiah comes from this small, out-of-the-way place. There's a message there. God will defeat God's enemies, but he will do it in a surprising way. In a surprising way. Not with conventional armies. The Israelites are not going to go marching to war and conquer Assyria with their own weapons. God wins the victory, but he does it in a way that is sub contrario, under the opposite. Through lowly means, God defeats the high and mighty. God himself gets the glory. So out of this out-of-the-way place, Bethlehem, the hometown of David. You, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, Tzair, little to be among the clans of Judah, the thousands of Judah. An Aleph was like a thousand group. And he's saying that Bethlehem is too little. It's not even big enough to be called an Aleph. It's not even big enough to be called a clan. It's so little. It's a small little town. Of course, we remember Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but he also grew up in Nazareth, and Nazareth was no big metropolitan center either, was it? Archaeologists tell us that Nazareth only had about 400 people. We're talking a small town boy here. 400 people. What's that? Right? From you, Bethlehem, to me will go forth. Yet say that's an imperfect future tense. Will go forth to be Moshael, a ruler. And now Moshael usually takes the preposition Beth over Israel. So not a ruler in Israel, but a ruler over Israel. As we're going to see later, that this ruler over Israel, his rule extends to the ends of the earth. So his rule is centered in Israel, but it doesn't stop there. The purpose is a worldwide rule. Moshael maybe is used instead of Malach so that we don't think of just another typical king like Jerusalem has experienced, not another Ahaz. This person is going to be different. And his motzaoth, his goings forth, his exits, will be from Kedem. Kedem is ambiguous. It could mean, it means from of old. Could mean several centuries ago. Could mean a millennium ago. Could mean from eternity. It depends on the context. So it's ambiguous, and I take it as intentionally so. This, first of all, the promise to David, at the time of Micah, was very old. David is promised to David is around 1000 B.C. Micah is 700 B.C., so that's three centuries right there. But that promise was first issued in Genesis 49, that from the tribe of Judah will come a ruler. And so we're talking at the time of Jacob. So we're talking around at least 1700 B.C. So that's 1,000 years before Micah that you started first hearing about a king coming from Judah. So that's very old. But we also know in another way, with all the promises that God himself would come mightily to save, that this can also mean from eternity, that the second person of the Trinity is from eternity, God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten, not made. He's not made, but from eternity. There was not a time when he was not. Pace Arius, And so I think it's ambiguous, and we should leave it ambiguous. If you interviewed Micah, would he know all this? I don't know. He doesn't say all of this. But certainly the words are open to this fuller meaning. His goings forth are from of old, from days of old. Olam literally means the most distant point on the timeline. And again, it can refer to hundreds of years ago. It can refer to eternity. But ancient Israel never thinks of eternity as without time. They just think of it as the most distant point on the timeline. So God is from Olam. Again, it's I take it as ambiguous. It could go either way. The promise itself is very ancient of a human ruler from Judah, but also it's open to it being understood as God himself in the flesh. The emphasis here, though, is on his human birth in Bethlehem. Verse 2, God is the speaker, therefore, or the prophet is the speaker, therefore he, God, will give them, Israel, will give them over for a time. So God lets Israel be persecuted and suffer until this Messiah comes. Israel itself will be kind of a church militant until the Messiah comes and gives them victory. So that's the picture. They have to wait in mourning, in lonely exile here, until the Son of God appear. He will give them over for a time until the time when she who is about to give birth will have given birth. That's a feminine participle. So it's referring to a woman who is, and it's a participle, about to, yalad, give birth. And then we have a perfect verb, when she will have, I take it as a future perfect, will have given birth. Here Isaiah is using the same language we see in Isaiah 7, or Micah is. So Micah and Isaiah are very similar in so many ways. A lot of the same terminology, a lot of the same emphases. So he would refer here to that woman mentioned in Isaiah 7. And the rest, Yether, of his brothers will return. His brothers would be the fellow people of the tribe of Judah. This Messiah belongs to the tribe of Judah. His brothers, the people of Judah, were taken into exile by Assyria. Climactically later on, they'll be taken into exile by the Babylonians when Jerusalem itself goes into exile. But those exiles will return. Will return in what sense? Well, literally, they'll come back to Zion, but also spiritually, they'll return to God. So that verb shuv can mean to return both ways. Al, I take that as on the sons of Israel, or in addition to, over and above the sons of Israel. The sons of Israel would be the rest of the Israelites. So there's hope for the tribe of Judah together with the other tribes. Remember, the first thing that the Messiah does is restore Israel. So the Messiah doesn't, first of all, appear in Greece, right? He doesn't land in North America. We're not Mormons. His first century purpose was to restore Israel in the land of Palestine in the Middle East. That's where he started. Eventually, the gospel made it over here to North America, but that was years later. And, all right, so Messiah is going to be focused on Israel, and Israel needed restoring. Micah is very clear on that. They are going into exile literally, and they are estranged from their God also spiritually. They need help. Number 3, verse 3. And he will stand and he will shepherd. So here's that picture of the Messiah as the shepherd king, a very common image going back to King David. and he will shepherd in the strength of Yahweh. Now we're thinking of the Messiah in his human nature, this man from the house of David, this human Messiah, and he's going to do it, though, in the strength of Yahweh. He's not by his own strength. This human king is going to be Yahweh's king. In the majesty, in the exaltation, not of himself, but in the exaltation of the name of Yahweh, his God. This human Messiah has a God. He prays to a God. His God is Yahweh, the true God. So it says his God. We need to remember this. New Testament speaks this way as well. Jesus is true man, and he worships the true God. Jesus keeps the first commandment. So we need to always think of the Messiah as true man, one of us, from the house and lineage of David. So that's the strength by which he will shepherd. And they will dwell. This is not Chuv, this is Yashav. And they will dwell, because the Messiah is here, now they will dwell securely is the idea. They'll inhabit in their place, no longer besieged. Why? Because now, when the Messiah comes, he will be great, this Messiah will be great, to the ends of the earth. In other words, he will be the Lord over all, and therefore he will not let his people be afflicted and besieged. So his people will dwell securely. Jeremiah says the same thing, right? When this new and greater David appears, Israel will dwell in security. Verse 4, but here we see that the Messiah's rule begins in Israel, but it ultimately extends to the ends of the earth. So eventually it did make its way to North America. Where are we in the Bible? We're at the ends of the earth. North America is not Israel. We're not even on the biblical radar screen. That's how far away we are. We're just way out there. They never even heard of us. Verse 4, so we should not think so highly of ourselves. Verse 4, and this one will be, or he will be, Zeh Shalom, this one of peace. That's referring to the Messiah. The Messiah will be this one of peace. He will be characterized by shalom, by wholeness. Remember Isaiah 9, he'll be the Prince of Peace. Isaiah 11, the wolf will lie, when the Messiah comes, the wolf will lie down with the lamb. The Messiah brings this peace. Well, what about his enemies? What about Israel's enemies? And that's why we should not just stop here, but keep reading. And with verse 4b, as for Ashur, Assyria, Micah lives in the Assyrian crisis, and so Assyria is the key example and representative of the enemies of God's people. Assyria, when he comes into our land, and of course the Assyrian army did, so this passage might even precede that a little bit. When he comes into our land, when he tramples on our fortresses, then we, Isaiah speaking for the people, will raise up against him 7 shepherds and 8 princes of man. So the Messiah will enable us to raise up against Assyria, against the enemy of our people, these leaders, and they will shepherd the land of Israel, of Assyria, with the sword, which of course is the Old Testament theocratic way of speaking about how God's people will rule over their enemies. And they will shepherd the land of Nimrod, that's the founder of Assyria, at its gates. But we haven't left Messiah behind. The next verse, you switch to a singular verb, Vahitzil, and he will deliver from Assyria. Is this a reference to Hezekiah preliminarily? Is it thinking of Assyria as simply the enemies of God's people in general? At any rate, it's interesting that the Messiah delivers from Assyria when the Assyrian enters into our land and when he tramples in our border. So, right now, Israel goes through the Assyrian oppression, but the day is coming when God, through this Davidic king, will give them victory over their enemies. Ultimately, this is not only referring to Christ's first coming, this is referring to his second coming, when the church militant becomes the church triumphant, when Christ comes again in glory and defeats all his enemies once and for all, not just in principle or in a hidden way, but visibly and externally. He even puts away death itself and ushers in the new creation. So ultimately, Micah is pointing our way forward to also the second coming of the Messiah. So we need to let Micah give us hope. Hope in the promises of God fulfilled and to be consummated. Thank you very much. I now pass it over to my colleague, Dr. Jeffrey Gibbs.